Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Well, many people believe that if they keep their heads down and work hard, they'll be recognized as experts in their field simply based on the merits of their work. But we know that today that's no longer true. To make a name for yourself, you have to capitalize on your unique perspective and knowledge and inspire others to listen and take action. And that's what today's show is about. Coming up around 12:35, we'll talk with Emmy and Peabody award-winning TV writer and producer, Harvard-educated Rhodes Scholar, the list goes on, about his new book. It's called Lawyers, Liars, and the Art of Storytelling, using stories to advocate, influence, and persuade. But first, I'm going to talk with returning guest, Dori Clark. She explains how to identify the areas that set you apart and promote them successfully. And the key, of course, is to recognize your own value, cultivate your expertise, and put yourself out there. And I wanted to talk about just one chapter in Dori's book. And for those of you who are watching on camera, you can see the book here. It's called Stand Out, How to Find Your Breakthrough Idea and Build a Following Around It. And there's a ton of really great information in here. And we are just going to focus on just one of these chapters today. And that is about creating your niche, finding it, honing it down, and expanding it, because wonderful things can come out of it, as some of the stories that Dori will share with us highlight. So let me tell you a little bit about her. You may remember her from before. She joined us to talk about her first book, Reinventing You, Define Your Brand, Imagine Your Future. And there was a great story around that book, which Dori shares in this interview. Because of scheduling conflicts, I think she's been traveling for the last 6 weeks nonstop. So I managed to catch her at a university where she was giving a talk. So we actually recorded this last week. We're going to bring it to you today for the first time. But let me tell you a little bit about her. She's a marketing strategy consultant, professional speaker, and frequent contributor to the Harvard Business Review, to Time Magazine, Entrepreneur, and the World Economic Forum blog. And she's recognized as a branding expert by the Associated Press, Fortune, and Inc. magazine. And she consults, as I said, and she speaks for a diverse range of clients, including Google, the World Bank, Microsoft, Morgan Stanley, the Ford Foundation, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And again, the list goes on. And in 2006, she launched her own marketing strategy consulting business. She just says because she went through a kind of reinvention herself, which she talks about in the interview, and because she's passionate about helping others take control of their professional lives and make an impact on the world. So this new book is called Stand Out, How to Find Your Breakthrough Idea and Build a Following Around It. And we're going to bring that interview to you right now. Dori Clark. Okay, so Dori, let's begin with the obvious. Tell us what Stand Out is about and why you wrote this book.
Well, these days we all know we're in an increasingly competitive workplace environment. It seems like there's always someone willing to do the job cheaper. And frankly, if we want to have the kind of thriving careers that we deserve, if we want to have a kind of career insurance, it's become increasingly important for people to develop a strong personal brand and to really be known as an expert at something. And so in Stand Out, I try to help people work through what they can be known for and how within their company or within their community they can really be recognized for their true talents.
Right. So tell us how this ties in with your first book, Reinventing You, because I think they go hand in hand.
Yeah, they really do. For Reinventing You, that was actually a book written based on my own experience. I I was a laid-off newspaper reporter, and I had to reinvent myself professionally a number of times into being a presidential campaign spokesperson, a nonprofit executive director, and I realized that more and more, it's a common thing for people to change jobs, change careers frequently, but the next step is once you've reinvented yourself into a place you want to be, you know, once you've found the place that you'd like to work and make your mark, then the next step becomes, okay, how do you really get noticed? How do you get recognized in an increasingly noisy environment? How do you make sure people understand your true talents and abilities? And that's what Standout is about.
Right. And so last time we talked about reinventing you. We did talk a little bit about the pros and cons of being a generalist versus a niche provider. And so today I'd like to focus, if we can, on really just one chapter of the book of Standout, and that is all about finding your niche, creating it, and expanding it. And, you know, I think it can be really difficult. I know it was difficult for you, you said, to narrow things down because you have so many interests. I definitely have the same problem. And when we're interested in many things, it can be very easy to get pulled astray and get off that niche path. So let's talk a little bit about how we begin to find our niche, because I think the big fear there with many people is that they don't want to be known just for one thing. So how do we begin to find our niche?
Yeah, you raise a really important point, Vicky. I think that a lot of people steer away from the idea of developing an expert niche because they think they're going to be permanently pigeonholed that way. But really the secret is going deep initially and then branching out strategically from there. But I would say that the first step in developing what you want to be known for, you know, one place to start, of course, is just what you're interested in, what you're passionate about. Your niche could be something, you know, whether it's comic books or Facebook marketing, you know, being driven by your passion is a key. Another element, of course, is areas where you may have a special expertise. Let's say you've become a lawyer, but in the past your hobby has been acting. Maybe you could decide that you are the person at your law firm that is going to take an interest in entertainment law and make that your specialty. So I think it's a combination of initially drawing from your past experiences and things that light you up and choosing to go deep there.
And so how do you talk about this in the book, how you avoid choosing a niche that's too narrow. What kind of considerations are you looking at?
Well, I think that really the question is, can your niche be sustained over the long term? And, you know, I think that in many ways, you know, the question, a sort of rule of thumb that I like to have is, if you created a blog about this topic, would you actually have enough content that you could write something new about it every day? That doesn't mean you have to have a blog about it, although I certainly am a fan of blogging and content creation, but that's kind of a litmus test for how much information there is out there and how many directions you can take it. If you decided to have a blog, you know, just about, you know, what Tom Cruise is wearing that day, you know, there's not that far you can go. But if you pick celebrity fashion, that's a niche, but it's deep enough that there's plenty to say.
Right. You give some great examples in the book, some real life stories. You talk about somebody called Nate Silver, who was a board accounting firm employee and tried to entertain himself with a mix of activities. And I had deja vu when I read that, because I remember my days as a banker. And I was to the point where I was like, boy, you know, you do get to a point where what else can you learn in the business? And so I turned my activities to mentoring and coaching younger people coming into the business. Do you have a favorite story in here about somebody finding their niche?
Well, actually, one of my favorites in the book is about Rachel Ray, the Food Network celebrity. And part of the reason that I love her story is that, you know, she, of course, for people who aren't familiar with her, developed an expertise, you know, doing these 30-minute meals, meals you can make in 30 minutes. And I often hear from people, you know, a little bit of pushback. They'll say, well, this is great, Dory, but, you know, coming up with, you know, with a big idea, being known for something, it's wonderful for other people, but I'm just a regular particular person. I can't do this. But I want to push back on it because the beauty of Rachel Ray, she's become very famous, very successful, and ultimately, she's not an expert. She didn't start out as being an expert. She didn't go to culinary school. She didn't have a fancy restaurant that she owned. She was a regular person who actually got her start doing cooking demos at a Price Chopper grocery store and then got a local cable television show and went from there. But the reason that the Food Network loved her and took her on was because, unlike everybody else who was on there who actually was a famous chef, she was somebody who was normal and relatable. And so I think oftentimes we underestimate our own talents. We say, oh, I'm just a regular person. But Rachel Ray is too. And the trick is, depending on the context, because Rachel Ray was in the Food Network context with all these celebrity chefs, she was special because of her normal person relatability, and that made her successful. So it's really putting yourself into an environment where your talents can shine through. We all have something to contribute.
Right. And I have to say that was my favorite story in the book, too, because she really took opportunities that nobody else wanted because either they were too far away, they didn't pay enough, there was no seemingly apparent benefit in doing them, but she just kept doing it. And the thing that I really loved was when the Food Network, she just thought, well, this isn't going to happen for me, and because I'm not a chef, and the Food Network turned around and said, but that's the point, we don't want a chef.
That's exactly right. It's a very powerful thing that every person has, just by dint of their experiences, the way that they've seen the world, we all see the world differently, and so we have a contribution that we can make.
Well, my guest today is Dori Clark. Her new book is called Stand Out, How to Find Your Breakthrough Idea and Build a Following Around It. Stay tuned. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
When is the best time to talk to your family about staying in touch during a disaster? When floodwaters reach your door? When wildfires are engulfing the edge of your neighborhood, or an earthquake is destroying buildings? Or is the best time, perhaps, today? During a disaster, you may not be able to stay in touch with your family or friends as easily as you think. Go to mil.wa.gov and make your emergency plan today. Don't wait. Communicate. Brought to you by Washington State Emergency Management Division, local emergency management agencies, FEMA, and the Ad Council.
Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair discusses issues that are important to you, like good health and well-being, finding a new job and building your business, overcoming life's big challenges and making sense out of chaos, and living with passion and joy. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for show schedule and guest information.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
Following the herd is fine until they lead you off a cliff. Think for yourself. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. We are talking today with Dori Clark. Her new book is called Stand Out, How to Find Your Breakthrough Idea and Build a Following Around It. Dori, I wonder if you'd share, have you had a big breakthrough idea yourself? And tell us about that.
Well, one of the things that I've experienced, actually, and as I was interviewing these 50 different thought leaders from my book Stand Out, I discovered it was actually a fairly common pattern. Sometimes people imagine that in having, their breakthrough idea, that it has to be this lightning bolt, some revelation have. And they get discouraged because that certainly doesn't happen all the time. But actually, it turns out that many ideas, you know, many of the ideas that turn out to be most powerful are not instantaneous. They're things that we actually work our way into by doing. And so for me, something that was very powerful for me was the publication of my first book, Reinventing You. And that's something I never imagined that would be a big theme or something that I was pursuing. It wasn't a conscious plan. But actually, I started blogging, and a post about professional reinvention was the second post that I ever wrote for the Harvard Business Review. And it turned out that one just took off. It became popular. They asked me to turn the blog post into a magazine article, and as a result of the magazine article, multiple literary agents approached me and said, would you like to turn it into a book proposal? So it was not a master plan at all, but it did become a big idea that has defined me in many ways professionally, and it emerged really by just rolling up my sleeves and doing, and I think that that's the case for a lot of folks. You don't have to wait for a lightning bolt. Your ideas can come in the process of living your life and doing your work.
Yeah, just keep doing the work. I love that story, Dori. I love it. I put that in the Rachel Ray category there. You know, just rolling up your sleeves and doing the work. So let's talk a little about how we distinguish ourselves in your niche. Because if you're not differentiating yourself from everybody else in your niche group, you're in trouble. So wonder if you'd just share a couple of tips on what kind of questions we should be asking ourselves about how we can distinguish ourselves.
One of the best questions to ask yourself is how are you different than most of the people in your field? I think in the past, there's been a sort of push toward homogeneity in the corporate world. You know, it's always been, oh, do you have the right credentials? Do you have the same credentials as everyone else? But these days, really what is setting people apart in a competitive environment is how are you different? Because the question is, what can you contribute that is unique? And so really, you know, taking the time to ask yourself, what is it that is different? You know, maybe you studied something different in college, or you transitioned from a different career. Maybe you see something differently. You could be in the same industry, but perhaps you worked at a different company, so you've had a slightly different take on things. Maybe you have a hobby that you're intensely interested in, or maybe your cultural background or demographic background is different than the majority of people in your field. All of those things are factors that enable you to see the world in a different way and may consequently lead to breakthroughs that other people just really wouldn't be able to see.
Yeah, I've found this to be true for myself, is that you just never know where the next break is going to come from. You know, even like 2 or 3 or 4 years after you've done something, something will come up. And that's how I got into radio, actually, because a series I'd written 3 years before, somebody read and picked up the phone and called me.
That's fantastic.
So I'm sure you've had many of the same experiences, especially with your book and the blog. So let's talk about developing your niche, because I think this is something that needs constant revisiting. We need to, you know, always be aware of what's around us and staying relevant. We need constant stimulation on that. Couple of key tips on developing your niche.
Yes, exactly. So when it comes to nurturing your niche and developing it over time, I think that one of the key things that I would recommend for people is making sure that you actually are cross-pollinating your ideas. And what I mean by that is that one of the themes that I talk about in Standout is the importance of drawing from different backgrounds. So it's interesting. It's almost a paradox, because you can go deeply inside your niche, but you can have better and more revelatory ideas if you are pulling from without. So for instance, if you are an internet entrepreneur, it's wonderful to talk to other internet entrepreneurs. You can learn a lot from them, but you're probably not going to have a substantive breakthrough, because you're just going to be honing a narrow band of best practices. However, if you talk to somebody in a vastly different field, you may be able to really see things in a way that shakes up your niche and is able to propel you forward.
Yeah, I think also being in that constant state of learning is great motivation to keep growing.
Yes, that's exactly it. I think a related point, David Allen of Getting Things Done fame, he's a productivity expert. I interviewed him for Standout, and one of the points that he made that I thought was quite powerful, he said you don't need to have a lot of time to have a great idea. What you need is space. You need mental space. You need white space. And that is what we are so lacking in today's society. I mean, everybody's being pulled in a million directions. Your mind's back on your meetings or your inbox. And I think if we can begin to carve out more space, even if it's just as simple as turning off your smartphone when you're sitting down for a meal, that is something that can pay major dividends in terms of being able to make your mark with your ideas.
Yes, I underlined that chapter very heavily, let me tell you. Some great advice in there. So I want to talk about expanding your niche now. And you say in Standout that once you become a recognized expert in one area, it's infinitely easier to expand into new realms. Now, that's good news for people who really don't want to feel they're boxed in. But how so? How is it easier once you're established as an expert in one area to then branch out?
There's a couple of ways that this factors in. The first one is that reputationally, you have an advantage. There is a phenomenon in psychology known as the halo effect, which has been proven again and again by research to show that if people view you as being good at one thing, they are likely to generalize and to say, oh, well, you just must be smart overall. You must be great overall. And so they're willing to give you the benefit of the doubt when you move into new areas, which is how we so often see CEOs or actors, for instance,
transitioning
into politics, that people say, oh, well, you know, he was successful here, he must be successful there. The other factor is more of a logistical one, but very powerful, is that you are going to make contacts and connections in the course of establishing yourself as an expert in one area. And those are very transferable. So, for instance, if you have established yourself as an expert in, let's say television news, well, great. You write about it, you speak about it. Let's say you often have done op-eds for the local newspaper about television news. You now know the op-ed editor. And so if you say to him, hey, I have a new idea for a piece. You know, I've done these pieces for you about television news, but there's a new development about Oprah and the next thing that she's doing. That's not exactly television news, but clearly I know about television in general. Would you be interested in the op-ed? They're probably going to say yes, because they already know who you are and they know that you're a good writer. So you can leverage those connections to expand out.
Right, and you give there's an awesome story in here, I thought. Sophal Ear was his name, and he became a specialist in Cambodia. He was an expert on Cambodia, which sounds a kind of strange thing to, as you point out in the book, to be an expert on, but that led to all kinds of opportunities for him down the road.
Yes, that's exactly right. I thought he was a perfect embodiment of this phenomenon. He's an academic, he's a political economist who studied Cambodia, which was an area of passion for him because his family, when he was a baby, he was actually rescued out of Cambodia during the Khmer Rouge genocide. And so he was very curious about and wanted to study his homeland that his family had to flee. But that wasn't the place that he stopped. I mean, Cambodia, while a lovely country, is not huge on the geopolitical stage at this point. But instead, because of his deep knowledge of Cambodia, he's been able to weigh in on a huge number of things. One of them is avian flu, because he had developed an expertise in Southeast Asian livestock and was knowledgeable about that. He's also given a popular TED talk about criminal justice, because in his study of Cambodia, he had become very knowledgeable about the Khmer Rouge tribunals. So you can really expand out if you're strategic about it.
Right. And you say in the book Standout, if you're strategic, you can leverage your niche expertise, as Ear did, into a broader role as a thought leader. So tell me how you define, first of all, how you define strategic, because I think that's a word that many people throw around but don't really understand.
Yes, it's true. So in terms of strategically expanding your niche, really what I'm talking about is moving into adjacent areas. Where you move into needs to make sense to people if you explain that narrative. So for instance, if you have been an expert in television news and you say to your contact at the newspaper, hey, now I'd like to write an op-ed about ballet. They're going to say, what? You know, what do you know about that? That doesn't really make any sense. And so, you know, yes, you can maybe make your case, and maybe you've somehow separately developed a great expertise in ballet, but it's not going to be an immediate yes. But if you pick other areas that that are adjacent, that are plausible. So, okay, you wrote about television news in the past. Now you could write about political campaigns, because clearly television news plays a big role in how we view electoral politics. Or maybe you write about the sitcoms on television, or the current television lineup, or what Oprah's doing, or mergers and acquisitions in the cable industry. Any of those things are plausible directions where people can say, oh, okay, this transition makes sense to me, and they're willing to give you the benefit of the doubt.
Right. And so also, you just mentioned thought leadership, and you do talk a lot about this in the book. Again, I think this is a phrase that's bandied around without much thought behind it. I was down in L.A., and I was also out in Chicago last month, and I must have met a dozen thought leaders, and all they did was quote other people. That does not a thought leader make, right? Tell us how you define thought leader.
Yes. So in Standout, I actually posit a very particular definition of thought leader. I think that sometimes people get a little sick of the term because I think it has been misused in some cases. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's plenty of people who like to beat their chests and call themselves thought leaders, which I think is not really appropriate. It's a little bit egotistical. But I do think that individuals aspiring to be a thought leader, that is actually a worthy thing to aim at. And the reason is, the way that I define it, two pieces to it, right? The thought part implies that what you are known for is your ideas. You're not just famous for being famous. You are well known and respected because of the quality of your ideas, which I think any professional can get behind. The second part that's also critical, this is thought leader, is if you are a leader, by definition, you have to have followers. You can't just be someone up in an ivory tower coming up with ideas and hoping they work or assuming they work. You have to be out there engaging the public, talking about your ideas, and advocating for them, because the real mark of a thought leader is that they are somebody who has impact in the world.
Right.
And that is something that I think we need more of.
We do indeed. We do. So we're almost at the end of our segment, Dorian. I want to just go back to something we talked about in the beginning. And again, that's, you know, people who don't want to get locked down into a niche. And I want to talk about two people you mentioned actually in your first book, Reinventing You, Malcolm Gladwell and Tim Ferriss. I think Malcolm Gladwell's name is, you know, very well known, but he's written on many different subjects. He hasn't locked himself into really a genre. And the other one is Tim Ferriss, who wrote The 4-Hour Work Week. You know, he was known then as a business writer, but as you point out in the book, in the first book he wrote, he writes so many different things now because he didn't want to be branded as a business writer. What was their strategy there, or how are they perceived, I guess, is what I'm looking for.
Yeah, so what I think Tim Ferriss did in a really interesting way, I mean, he followed up what you would call a typical business book with a book about fitness and then a book about cooking, the 4-hour body.
Yeah.
And then the 4-hour chef.
Yeah.
Which on the surface might just seem random. You know, why is he doing that? Why would anyone listen to him about cooking if they had become a fan of his business ideas? But really, he was very strategic. He was operating at a pretty high level because he refused to box himself in to being known as a business author. And instead, he said, no, you know, writing about business is not what I do. Writing about lifestyle design is what I do. Ultimately, he was able to connect the dots at a much higher level to make a story that made sense about all of the pieces that he brought together. And in his case, he believes that it's about living a rich life. And that's something that his audience was interested in many facets. And so if you are interested in lots of different things that on the surface people might say, what on earth do these have in common? I think something that's very powerful to do is to help create your own story. Don't just leave it to other people to figure out what they have in common. Tell your own story and say, here's how these things connect. And when you do put that narrative forth, it makes it easier for like-minded people who are interested to come find you.
Well, I think this is an awesome book. It's called Stand Out, How to Find Your Breakthrough Idea and Build a Following Around It. It's got 9 chapters in. We really barely covered one of them today when we were talking about niche. But at the back of it, there are some classroom or book group discussion questions. And Dori, I'm going to throw one of those back to you. And the question is, who are the thought leaders you admire most and why?
Oh, that's great. That's a great question. Well, you know, I think one of them that I really admire, I'll pick one out of many, my friend Michael Port comes to mind. He's a business author who is most famous for his book, Book Yourself Solid, and he has been able to form a really wonderful community of people. I think that that's something that that I admire a lot, because I actually consider it the highest level of thought leadership is not just sharing your ideas, but building an engaged community of people around around the idea that believe in it and share it. And so he's done that with the Book Yourself Solid concept. Currently, he's working on a concept called Heroic Public Speaking that is a sort of band of several hundred people that are all studying to become better speakers.
Wow.
So I admire what he's done a lot.
Well, great, great information, great insights. Final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with today, Dori?
Yeah, thank you. Well, I actually have a free resource if your listeners are interested. It's a free 42-page standout workbook that helps walk people through coming up with their own breakthrough ideas and spreading them. And that's on my website, doriclark.com, D-O-R-I-E-C-L-A-R-K.
Super. Thanks so much for being with us, Dori. And again, the book is called Stand Out, How to Find Your Breakthrough Idea and Build a Following Around It. And Dori's website, doriclark.com. And again, that was Dori Clark. Her book, Stand Out, How to Find Your Breakthrough Idea and Build a Following Around It. We taped that last week, so we brought that to you for the first time today. And I really love this book. There's a great deal of information in here, which I think somebody might find helpful if they're in midlife crisis mode or just want to amp things up a little. All right, we are going to take a very quick break. We're going to get hold of our next guest, Jonathan Shapiro, and we'll be back to talk about lawyers, liars, and the art of storytelling. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicky St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicky partners with people just like you at the exact level you need. Whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicky today. Email Vicky at VickySt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicky and her work at VickySt.Clair.com.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to NuPro Supplements, we cover the world of animals. This week, January 17th, we're educating the human animal. Zach and Haley, lead farmers from the Ananda Farm and CSA on Kamano Island, join me. Learn about no-till organic farming, the animals, all the products they're making, and how you can participate in the CSA and the dinners at the farm next summer. They're an extraordinary young couple you'll enjoy knowing. Join us for Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair discusses issues that are important to you, like good health and well-being, finding a new job and building your business, overcoming life's big challenges and making sense out of chaos, and living with passion and joy. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for show schedule and guest information.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Find out about upcoming shows at conversationslive.net.
Remember, you're listening to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. You are listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, and my next guest is Jonathan Shapiro. He's an Emmy and Peabody Award-winning TV writer and producer, Harvard-educated Rhodes Scholar, former federal prosecutor, and author of the new book, Lawyers, Liars, and the Art of Storytelling, Using Stories to Advocate, Influence, and Persuade. I love the name of that, Lawyers, Liars, and the Art of Storytelling. So I'm going to bring Jonathan on, and we'll hear a little of his background before we start talking about the book here. Jonathan Shapiro, welcome.
Thank you so much. Good to be here.
I just love the name of that book. It's very eye-catching, which is always good for a title of a book.
I wanted to make clear there are three separate ideas. I don't think lawyers are all liars or that they're all storytellers. So that was the purpose.
Well, you do talk about that in the book, that the lawyers who are not good storytellers are not particularly good lawyers, right?
That is my contention, yes.
Well, you say persuading others is the biggest challenge lawyers, businessmen, politicians, advertisers, and entertainment professionals face. It's also the biggest problem most of us face in our private lives, how to persuade children to do the right thing, to get a loved one, or to when you're trying to give advice to somebody. So let's share a little bit about you, and then we'll jump into the book. And I've heard you say, I was watching a YouTube video with you, Jonathan, and I've heard you say you've been all three of these things, a lawyer, a liar, and a storyteller. So tell us a little bit about your background.
I was a federal prosecutor for 10 years. I was a newspaper reporter before that. I was a speechwriter for politicians. And I guess more than anything, I've always been an avid fan of stories. I mean, ever since I was a little kid, they were the best part of school and of going to a house of worship and listening to my dad sell furniture on the road. I just love stories, and I've come to appreciate that lawyers, liars, for the most part, if they're good at what they do, are great storytellers. So are saints and great leaders. Story is the most efficient and effective way to convey an idea and information. And it's increasingly, I think, becoming a lost art. So that was sort of the reason I wrote the book as well.
Mm. And so tell us how you got into TV writing from being a lawyer. A lot of lawyers do make that transition, you know, into storytelling, into novels, fiction, film. And I heard that your wife was a TV writer, and she just had twins and had something to do with double benefits. I wasn't sure if that was a tall story.
Yes, that's a true story. My wife, the irrepressible and brilliant Betsy Borns Shapiro, although she says the Shapiro is silent, was a comedy writer on Roseanne for 3 years, and that's what she was doing when we met. And when we had twins, I was a federal prosecutor handling organized crime cases. And she said, you know, if you could sell a script and get into the Writers Guild, we could get double health benefits for the twins. So it was that unbelievably artistic decision that led me to write a script. And it's sort of a kind of a miraculous thing. I wrote a script, and then it went to David E. Kelley, who read it and asked me if anything funny had ever happened during a trial, and I told him a story, and he hired me. And 15 years later, that's still what I'm doing.
Yeah, amazing. So what does it take to become a good storyteller?
I think that it takes five things. The first thing is you've got to be a fan of stories. You've got to be someone who loves story, loves to hear them, loves to follow them, and learns from them. Then I think you've got to practice writing stories. And then the third, fourth, and fifth thing, which I lay out in my book, are the elements that you need to build your story into something that's going to be compelling and persuasive. I think that there was a time in America when students were taught rhetoric and were instructed on the best way to create arguments and story. And I think we've lost that. And so I wanted to point out in my book that there are steps you can take if you want to be a better storyteller. There's a way to learn to do it. And even if you're a good storyteller, there are ways to improve.
Mm. So tell us, well, you know what? We need to take a very quick break. When we come back, I'll have you tell our listeners a little bit about the book and how you formatted that and who it's really meant for. We're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and my guest is Jonathan Shapiro. And his book is called Lawyers, Liars, and the Art of Storytelling. We will be right back. Please stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Britney Spears. I've had the pleasure of singing all over this great nation, but today I'm lending my voice to the 15 million kids in America struggling with hunger. Every year, billions of pounds of excess food go to waste, while 1 in 5 children may be left without enough food for a meal. But it doesn't have to be this way. That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks helps to get food to families in need. Visit feedingamerica.org to learn how you can help. Together we can solve hunger. Together we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967, because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
If you'd like to advertise your business or service on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, or you'd like to become a program supporter by sponsoring one of our shows, please call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine a spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772 or email info@conversationslive.net. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
Going against the grain has never been so much fun. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest is Jonathan Shapiro. He is a federal prosecutor turned TV writer, very successful, with an Emmy and Peabody award-winning TV writer and producer, credits to his name. And it's small world, you know, because we were just chatting in the break, and Jonathan said that you tell us, you knew Jasper Carrot in my hometown.
Yes, there was a debate, if you can imagine, at the Oxford Union in 1986. And there were comics, Alan King and Steve Allen from the United States, and Jasper Carrot, and I can't remember the other comic, and I was one of the speakers for the American side, and I got to know Jasper Carrot, who is arguably, I still think, one of the funniest men in England.
He is. He's a very good comedian, very, very well known, and he has shockingly carrot-colored hair, hence the name, yes, Jasper Carrot.
Well, my contention was that the Brits were not as funny as the Americans, and one of the reasons you can tell is not even the British Jews are that funny. And we won that debate, as I recall. But Jasper Carrot sort of became a friend.
I'm surprised he let you get away with that one.
Yeah, well, I didn't say he did, actually. I paid a terrible price for it, but nevertheless.
All right, so let's get back to the book, Lawyers, Liars, and the Art of Storytelling, that you've just released. And tell us a little bit about why you put this book together and who you put it together for.
I was asked to give a speech to the American Business Trial Lawyers 40th Annual Convention on storytelling. And I thought, gee, it's really interesting that those guys would be interested in that, because they charge about $600 an hour to get their services. So I appreciated that they thought storytelling was important. And as I started to prepare the speech, I realized, gee, you know, storytelling is something I'm involved with every single seemingly minute of my day, whether it's talking to my three kids or my beloved wife or trying to convince my neighbor to cut their trees down. I'm always telling stories, and I'm always trying to persuade people through storytelling. And as someone who has practiced law, covered the courts as a newspaper reporter, taught law at USC for the last 25 years, I'm just amazed, I say this with all due respect, how terribly most lawyers tell stories. And I talk about the fact that, you know, we're really, we should be ashamed as a profession, because what was Abraham Lincoln but the greatest lawyer storyteller on earth? And what did his life really teach us? But that it's through story that we're able to move people, persuade people, convince people, and also bring people together as a community. And I talk about Lincoln. I talk about Professor David Dauba, who was my professor in law school, who taught rhetoric and biblical studies. And I just talk about the experiences I've had as a story writer for television shows like The Practice and Boston Legal and The Blacklist and Life. You know, there's that old joke that those who can't teach and those who can't teach, teach gym. I think I'm now one of those people who can't really tell stories, but I'm now trying to teach people to tell stories.
Okay.
But that's okay.
That's funny, because I wanted to be a gym teacher, and I'm a storyteller.
Well, there you go. Well, you were too good.
Okay. So... So let's look at, you've had some huge successes, absolutely huge successes. You also write about some of the failures you've had, and I think often we learn more from those failures, you know, that not necessarily a failure, but maybe didn't do as well as we thought they were going to do.
Or a failure.
So what has been your biggest learning, your learning curve as a TV writer?
As a TV writer, your goal is to create your own show and get it on the air. And it's very hard to do. I think the numbers are something like one out of every idea that's pitched to the network, I think it's one out of every maybe 100 gets ultimately put on the air. And then, of course, a third of all the shows that are put on last, right? Two-thirds of the shows are canceled.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in the business of failure. So I was very proud of the fact, it depends on how you look at it, I created and got three shows on the air. And I could name them, but you would never have heard of them because they didn't last on the air. And I thought that in terms of trying to teach how to tell a story, stories of failure are just wonderfully instructive. That you learn so much more out of failure than you do out of success. That I try in the book to explain why those series failed, why the storytelling in those series didn't work, and I also blame the public for not being more supportive and loyal.
There you go. So let's talk a little bit about the process of writing as a writer. Are you somebody who likes to outline, or is it more of an organic approach for you?
It's funny. I'm this very day. I'm turning in my first novel to the publisher, and it's the first of a. It's probably unseemly to be promoting something that hasn't come out yet, but it's the first of a trilogy of novels. I had a wonderful outline for this novel, and about 2 days into the writing, I realized it didn't make any sense at all, and I had to stop and start over. So I do believe strongly in an outline. But I think you have to be brave enough to realize when the outline isn't working and start over. You know, they say in Hollywood they don't pay us to write, they pay us to rewrite.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the other important points, I think, about storytelling. It's something you have to practice. It's something you have to write down and edit and be willing to change when it doesn't work.
Yeah. The editing process is critical on any kind of writing. That's where the real magic happens, right?
Well, I think in life, if one of my kids asked me once what superpower I would want to have, and I realized I would want the power to edit. I would like to live my life and then go into the edit room and take about 4 hours out of it,
mm-hmm.
which would be all the mistakes and pauses and things I wish I hadn't said. The great thing about storytelling is if you use the editing process effectively, you can do that. you can make your story as compelling as you want it to be. And I think all of us should be telling stories. I mean, one of the points I make in the book is just anybody who is interested in trying to leave something to their kids, anybody who's interested in trying to create a history for themselves, they should write the story of their lives, and they should give it to their children. They should have it. They should work on it. They should outline it. They should edit it, because it will be art, and it will be something that will matter to future generations more than almost anything else you can give them.
Yeah,
I really believe that. I believe there's something magical about stories, and I think there's something that's not only universal but also transformative. When you write a story, you create a world, and I fear schools do a terrible job encouraging all of us to be storytellers.
So I would agree with you on that. I totally agree, because they're often looking at, you know, is it grammatically correct, which does not necessarily a good story make. But so if we're not giving them the tools to build and tell their stories well, how would you change that? What kind of tools practices do they need to...
I know that we live in a time where everything is about testing, and I'm deeply disappointed that the SAT people have decided to do away with the essay portion of the test in the years to come. We seem to be drawing away from the idea of expository writing, the classic educational tool of knowing how to structure a compelling, persuasive, effective argument. Because we don't teach that anymore, we're also not teaching people how to write stories. And so what I wish, and I hope this becomes something that people start to consider, is we need to go back to the basics of teaching students how to write, how to structure, how to dream, and how to create story.
I agree. Yeah, I really agree with that, especially now with so many self-publishing tools available to people. It's that story is so important. So what basic narrative techniques would you tell them they need? What would you say to somebody, this is what how you start building your story? And I know that's a loaded question there.
It's not only, it's a great question, and I tell you, as I say in the book, I am not ashamed of admitting pretty much everything I'm about to say I stole from Aristotle. On the other hand, if you're going to steal from anybody, he can't sue. The statute of limitations have run. There, Aristotle talks about the about rhetoric. He's the ancient synthesizer of all the great rhetorical schools that existed at the time that he lived. And what he said is basically every compelling and effective presentation is built on three things: ethos, logos, and pathos, which we understand as credibility, logic, and emotion. Sometimes it's called the rhetorical triangle, but it's true not just for legal briefs and not just for sales presentations, but it's true for stories too. Every great story begins with the creation in the listener's mind that the speaker, the storyteller, is credible, is worth listening to, that the story is something you can follow. It has a logical progression, even if it's a magical, sort of realistic or fantastical world. There's a logic to it. And finally, the story doesn't just appeal to our minds, but it touches our hearts.
Yeah.
Simply said, harder to do.
Very well, very well put and very succinct. And we're right at the end of our segment here, Jonathan, but I just want to touch on the liars part in the title, Lawyers, Liars, and the Art of Storytelling. Where does that come into the book? And we've only got 30 seconds here.
Well, it's show business. You've got to know about liars, because otherwise you wouldn't talk to anybody. And I prosecuted liars for 10 years. And as a young man, I may have lied once or twice. And what I'm always fascinated with about liars is they're just great storytellers.
There we go. A final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with today.
I hope the Mariners get some pitching and that Seattle is competitive by September.
Thank you. We will be. I'm not a huge fan, but I just thought I'd throw that out there for everybody who's listening, and I'm going to respond. We will be ready, so watch out.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right. The book is called Lawyers, Liars, and the Art of Storytelling, Using Stories to Advocate, Influence, and Persuade. And the website is artoftellingstories.com. You can find out more information about Jonathan Shapiro and his work there. And I want to thank each of you for being with us today. We'll be back next week. And if you have questions or comments on today's show, you can find me at info@conversationslive.net or 800-495-7617. See you next week. Until then, live well, live strong. Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.